I'm a huge fan of consuming water throughout the day, but sometimes it can be kind of boring. I like to jazz up my water, and one of my favorite ways to do that is by adding juicy strawberry peach electrolytes by Organica into my simple modern tumbler and drink it in the afternoon. I'm really particular about the supplements I consume, and these electrolytes are gluten-free, they're non-GMO, and caffeine-free. There are also no preservatives, there's no artificial colors or flavors, and no artificial sweeteners. There's zero sugar, 5 grams of grass-fed collagen per serving, and it's a source of magnesium, which we are all depleted in. This is such a simple way to add something good into your body, and it's easy to do. Drinking plain water, unfortunately, isn't always good enough, and we miss out on some vital hydration for our body. Not only do electrolytes hydrate you, but they help with maintaining water balance, muscle contraction, nerve impulses, and temperature regulation. And the collagen is a source of grass-fed protein, which helps improve the overall look and health of our skin, hair, and nails. Right now, Organica is giving my community 25% off their orders online when you use code MEGAN25, MEGAN25 at checkout. Grab the electrolytes, and I also really like the enhanced collagen with magnesium biglycinate and L-theanine for my nighttime wind down drink. I just add it into my tea and snuggle in for a good night's rest. Don't forget to use code MEGAN, MEGAN25 at checkout to receive 25% off of your order. Enjoy! Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell, and I am the host of this show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell Gordon, and we're waiting on the little guy to fall asleep, which is why I'm talking a little lower than I normally do, trying not to wake the little guy up for his morning nap. Anyways, I hope you had a fabulous weekend. The sun is shining. I hope you're feeling good. And today we have an episode that I really feel like everyone, I always say this, but truly everyone can benefit from this because I feel like we all know someone who is gone through cancer, we've been touched by it ourselves, we are looking at kind of being more preventative or combating any sort of cancer in our bodies, and that is what today's episode is really all about. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Dr. Dominic Brandy. Dr. Brandy is a medical doctor, author, speaker, and cancer coach who has been practicing medicine for over 40 years. He is the founder of Natural Insights into Cancer, which is a passion project for Dr. Brandy. Natural Insights into Cancer uses diet, exercise, targeted supplements, and other lifestyle changes to help you fight cancer. He is also the founder of Beat Back Cancer Naturally, a book that includes 5 scientifically proven natural and plant-based ways to prevent, survive, and thrive with cancer. On this episode, we talk about how we can utilize diet, exercise, supplements, and lifestyle changes to help fight cancer. We also discuss his own personal journey with beating an incurable form of cancer, the top 5 foods we can consume daily to help combat and potentially prevent cancer, and so much more. You guys are going to love this episode. Make sure that you share it with someone in your life who is going through cancer, who has been touched by cancer, and just needs a little bit of hope and motivation, because Dr. Brandy absolutely provides that, but then he also gives you super tangible tips to implement into your life. So with that, please welcome Dr. Dominic Brandy to the Balance Your Life podcast. I I get a lot of DMs and emails asking me about certain products and brands that I use in my daily life because I rave about them so much online in my socials. And while I do encourage buying local when you can, sometimes you just can't. And that's where Amazon has come in so handy. I've created my Amazon storefront where I link all my favorite products and brands and my go-to book recommendations. You can find the products I use in my business, like my Yeti mic, the beauty products I swear by, like truly everyone needs a silk pillowcase for their skin and hair health, the body butter from Melita I just can't get enough of, the frother that I use daily for my coffee, and so much more. I am constantly adding more to the storefront, so make sure you are always checking back in to see the products and brands that I love and use. You can use the link in the show notes to follow along and shop all your beauty, wellness, business, fitness, and lifestyle needs. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dominic Brandy. I am so excited to have you on.
I'm excited to be here.
I would love if you could give a little bio of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining me from today.
Well, I am from Pittsburgh, but right now I am in sunny Miami Beach. So enjoying 75, 80 degree weather, sunshine, getting that vitamin D every day. A little background about myself. I had a plastic surgery slash med spa slash anti-aging center for over 42 years. So I am officially an old fart. Having had a practice that long, I sold it to a venture capital group about 3 years ago. At that point, we were the sixth largest plastic surgery med spa anti-aging center in the United States based on Allergan's statistics. They're the makers of Botox. But my cancer story really started 5 years ago. That's really when I started to get into this whole thing with counseling people that have cancer, help them change their lifestyles so they could have a lower chance of relapse and live a very full, energetic life. And it started, and the interesting thing about my story, it actually started 2 months before I got diagnosed with an incurable blood cancer called multiple myeloma 5 years ago. It was like November of 2017. And my wife and I were on a Viking cruise. And I have read well over 300 books on health and nutrition in my career because I had an anti-aging center all these years. And anytime I'm on vacation, I would always look for a book to read. So as soon as we got on the cruise, I went on to Kindle. I saw a book called How Not to Die by Michael Greger. I don't know if you've ever read it before. For your listeners, if you buy the hardback, it's about 2 inches thick, and about 1 inch of it are scientific references. And that was the thing that really intrigued me about this book as I started to read it. And it was just study after study after study that was showing that cultures and research cohorts that ate more plant-based had much lower incidence of cancer, cardiovascular disease, dementia, diabetes, metabolic disease, really all-cause mortality. And I was 2 days into this cruise, and I tell my wife, hey, I'm going to start eating whole food plant-based. And she thought I was crazy because there's all these desserts and meats and eggs and all this stuff. And I'm one of these people, when I decide to do something, I just do it. A lot of people that I counsel aren't like that. So I'll kind of gradually, tell them to introduce more plant foods and so forth. And just so you know, I don't tell my patients to eat totally whole food plant-based. I think if you have cancer, that's probably the best way to eat. But if you can eat, I would say, 85% plant-based and 15% if you want to add, animal products. I really don't have a problem with that. And we'll get into that, a little bit later. But anyway, I went full in, whole food plant-based. I didn't eat any meat or dairy from that. And I haven't since September of 2017. So I get home And then the week that I got home, I was in the middle of a plastic surgery case, and I felt a little pop in my right clavicle. And I really didn't think anything of it. I thought maybe it was a tendonitis or something. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And I remember by the end of October, it was like the last week of October, it was keeping me up at night. And I told my wife, I literally said, my wife's name is Trina. I said, Trina, I think I have bone cancer. And she thought I was crazy. She said, you're the healthiest person I know. There's no way you have bone cancer. So a week later, we're watching television and I accidentally knock over a container of water. I lunge for it and my collarbone just cracked right in half. I mean, it was very, very painful. I went to an urgent care center and it was completely displaced. I got an MRI. They did a biopsy of the area, and I had a 3-centimeter what they call plasmacytoma there. They ran a bunch of studies and they found out I had what's called an IgA kappa myeloma. And for your listeners, they may not know what multiple myeloma is. It's basically a cancer of the B cells. They're the cells that make antibodies. And the B cells, they develop all these mutations, and then they start to release this paraprotein. It's basically an antibody that really doesn't do anything. It just damages tissue. So I had this IgA, which is the most aggressive form of myeloma. There's basically IgA, IgG, IgM. IgG is kind of in the middle. IgM is the least aggressive, and IgA, the one I had, is the most aggressive. So my doctor wanted to put me on this triple regimen. It was like two oral medications, and then I would have to go in for these injections into my abdomen. And as I read, the vast majority of people that get that shot get a severe peripheral neuropathy in their feet and their hands. And I'm a surgeon. So I told my oncologist, hey, I don't want to do that. And the other thing, I had already been eating whole food plant-based for 2 months, and I was 100% sure that was going to help me in this battle against this incurable cancer. So he was upset with me. He took me into a side room. He introduced me to this other gentleman who had the Velcade, which is the name of the medication. And he tried to get him to talk me in to doing the Velcade. And actually that man is one of my good friends now. We go out to lunch all the time. He talked to me. I went into my oncologist and I told my oncologist that, hey, I'm not doing the Velcade. I just want to go with the oral medication and see what happens. So every month, my numbers just kept getting better and better. I had a personal Facebook page back then, and I would post my numbers to my friends, family, and followers. And every month, they just kept getting better and better. And by the time I hit 6 months, I was in a complete remission. And my oncologist was like amazed. He just thought there was no way I was going to get into a complete remission just on these two oral medications. So when I first got diagnosed, and this is kind of when my whole cancer, lifestyle coaching thing started, is that, I went on a deep search of the scientific literature. And I wanted to find out every single thing that I could do to help battle this cancer. And every morning I would spend, 2 to 3 hours on PubMed, looking at herbs, exercise, stress reduction studies, and so forth. And I was just gathering all of this information, and then I was incorporating it into my own regimen. Well, about a year after I got diagnosed, I decided I was going to give a lecture in Pittsburgh. And I'm very well known in Pittsburgh. I'd have a lot of TV stations interview on different, med spa, skincare, plastic surgery procedures. So there was one anchor person that I knew real well, and I gave her a call. I said, hey, Michelle, would you mind, doing a little story? I'm going to do a lecture at one of the hotels. And, if you could do a little thing, we'll put on TV, see if we can get some people to come. So we had 125 people come to this lecture that I gave. And I don't even know how I dragged this thing out for 2 hours. But I did. And that was the first time and only time I've ever got a standing ovation. I mean, it really took me back, the applause that I got. And the reason I really feel that these people gave me applause, a lot of them were cancer patients. And I think a lot of them just feel that they're at the mercy of the, you know, the chemo, the radiation, the surgery. You know, I had one lady come up to me afterward, and she was overtly obese. And she told me, and she basically had myeloma, the same thing that I have. She said, you know what, I asked my oncologist if I should change my diet. And he said, oh, no, just keep eating the way that you're eating. And she told me, she said, I just knew that that wasn't right. That just could not be right, what he told me. So I think when I gave that lecture, I just think it gave people hope that not only, you know, I do agree you need to do conventional medicine, but I think there's a lot of things you can do to improve your chances of not having a relapse and improving your survival. And not only that, but thriving with the cancer, having a very, you know, high quality of life. And then after I did that, I started a Instagram site. It's called Cancer Veggie Doc. I started a website. It's called naturalinsightsintocancer.com. I have a ton of blogs, videos that I do on Instagram. I have about 32,000 followers on there, and I do a post, you know, every, in fact, I posted you today on there just so people know to listen to your podcast. So I started to do that, and then I was having monthly meetings, and I would have speakers come in, and we would jam about 100 people into my one of my med spas. It was one of my largest ones, and it was really, you know, very educational. People loved it. Then COVID hit, and then you know, all that kind of stopped. But as I was giving these kind of monthly meetings, you know, I would spew out all this information. People say, hey, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. So that's when I decided to write my book, Beat Back Cancer Naturally. And believe it or not, I wrote that book in 3 months. I started, I had a writing coach. And for those out there that want to write a book, like if you ever want to write a book, she gave me some interesting facts. I had written a book, you know, probably 20 years ago. It took me 2 years to get through the thing. And I would just piddle at it here and there. But she told me that the average person can write about 900 words in an hour. So she said, if you wake up every morning, write 900 words, you should be able to get a short book done in 1 month, a medium book done in 2 months, and a long book done in 3 months. So that's what I did. It was Memorial Day. I started writing my book, and I said, I'm just going to write every day. And then I was done on Labor Day. And in the interim, I was doing research and so forth. But by that was the September it was done. November, at the first week of November, it was on Amazon. So so that's how, you know, that all happened. And then on my website, I do a lot of virtual consultations for cancer patients. We spend an hour or 2 hours, and we go over lots of different information, a lot of the information I had in that 2 hour lecture. And then I make a recommendation. I write them a letter the next day, and I give recommendations, you know, supplements that I think are strongly recommended, have 3 asterisks. If it's kind of medium, 2 asterisks, if, you know, they can take it or leave it, 1 asterisk. And then I usually follow them, you know, on a monthly basis. I have a like $20 a month kind of follow-up where they can text me and email me anytime they want. If they want to send me lab work, they want to, like, you know, throw out a text, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm there to help them through it. And I always contact these people. I try to contact them once a week. Hey, how's it going? Having any problems? I really try to coach them along, make sure they, you know, they get through their cancer journey. So that's kind of my, I know it was long-winded, but that's kind of my whole story, how I got to where I am right now.
No, I love it so much. And I feel like you're, when I received the email about having you on, I was like, this is amazing, because everybody knows, I would at least think a majority of people know at least one person in their life, it, not necessarily family, but it could be a friend that has had cancer or has passed away from cancer or currently struggling. Like, it's just, I mean, I know alone in my family, it almost seems like everybody has had some bout of cancer. And I think you're the perfect person to ask this. So back last April, I had an aunt who passed away from a rare cancer, and I'm totally blanking on what it was. It was like endocrine. It was like
endocrine,
a nervous system.
Pancreatitis? Oh, it was a nervous system?
Not the pancreatitis, but maybe, but the endocrine is definitely right. And it was in her pancreas, so maybe that's the full name of it. But I would have considered her to be a healthy person. And now this isn't someone I lived with, so I don't know her day-to-day activities, but, you know, walked every single day, ate what I would have assumed was a relatively healthy meal. Like, she was always the one who was eating salads and stuff. And I think for me, when you hear someone smokes and get lung cancer, you're like, okay, that makes sense. But why is it that you, and maybe there's not really a right answer to this, but like, why can the quote unquote healthy people get cancer? Is it just genetics? Is it environment? Is it, you know, that one time you ate a bunch of candy for a week and now it's caught up with you? Like, why would the healthier people tend to get cancer? Even like such as yourself, you said you were a relatively healthy person. Why does that happen?
Well, you really have to look at statistics. You know, in my book, I go over a lot of epidemiological studies. You know, the British Journal of Cancer looked at 60,000 people, followed them over 12 years. And people that ate more plant-based had much lower incidence of cancer. And so what that means is there were some people that ate plant-based that did get cancer. So it's all about percentages. And the thing that people need to realize, I would say probably about 5% of cancers, and I think most experts agree on this, are purely genetic. You know, if you have a BRCA, you know, gene mutation with breast cancer, you have a very high incidence of getting cancer. But one of the things that people don't understand is that every day that you are alive, you are getting bombarded with DNA mutations. Like today, you're going to get about 19,200 hits to your DNA. That's kind of an average, about 800 hits every hour. And you have about 100 plus DNA repair genes, and their job is to repair those genetic mutations. But there was a very interesting article, and I quote this a lot, by Dr. Mikhail Munsky. He's a very famous myeloma researcher. And he calculated by the time you are diagnosed with what I have, multiple myeloma, you have about 5,000 mutations in that cancer cell, DNA mutations. And by the time you relapse, you're at about 12,000 DNA mutations. So every day you're getting hit with these like free radicals that cause DNA mutations. And one thing about cancer patients is that when they're getting these chemo drugs, and I'm not against chemo, but I will tell you, I usually recommend to my patients to ask their oncologist if they can give them the lowest dose and also give it what's called metronomically. So instead of giving a big dose, you know, once a month, give smaller doses every week. And I've read a lot of studies that show that many times can be more effective with a lot less, you know, side effects. So when people are getting these chemo drugs, they're creating free radicals that are creating more DNA mutations. And then that's going to, as you get more and more, you're going to have a higher chance of getting a relapse. So I do recommend a whole food plant-based diet for my patients that I do cancer counseling for. And the reason is that plants have 63 times the antioxidant power compared to animal products. So you really want to jack up your phytonutrients. You know, I don't know if your viewers know this or you know this, but I've read various studies. We all know there's at least 25,000 phytochemicals in plant foods. I've read some articles where there's over 100,000. And I just saw a podcast, the Simon Hill podcast. He interviewed one of the premier researchers on phytochemicals, and he calculates there's over 5 million phytochemicals in plant foods that are edible. You know, there's probably 10 million when you look at all plants, you know, even counting the ones that aren't edible, but there's probably over 5 million. And these all have very powerful antioxidant activity. They have very powerful anti-cancer activity. They're immune stimulating. Usually they inhibit angiogenesis, you know, growth of blood vessels so that the cancer can spread. And when you eat any kind of food, for instance, if you eat an apple, I mean, there's thousands of phytochemicals in there. People don't realize that. You know, if they eat an orange, they think, okay, there's vitamin C in there. No, there's all kinds of phytonutrients. And these phytonutrients, as I said, they have very powerful antioxidant activity. So they're going to neutralize a lot of these free radicals that are being released just through your daily activity. You know, when you're eating a lot of, you know, fried foods, that creates a lot of Free Radicals. I just read one article. Every 15 cigarettes that people smoke, you know, they're creating, you know, a DNA mutation. And one puff of a cigarette creates 8 hours of free radical activity. So one of the things, you know, anybody has cancer, you need to really cut out the smoking, because that's like a free radical factory that's going to cause premature aging. But in your relative situation, you know, I don't know, you know, why that happened, but there's just a higher incidence as you get older. Once you get 65 or older, I mean, you've accumulated so many DNA mutations that a proto-oncogene can become an activated oncogene. So just so your listeners know, and you know, you have genes called proto-oncogenes that protect you from cancer. So when a cell starts getting a little out of whack, you know, there's a lot of DNA mutations, the proto-oncogene basically causes that cell to kill itself. They call that apoptosis. The proto-oncogene gets so many mutations, it actually becomes an activated oncogene. So instead of inhibiting the cancer, it actually promotes the cancer. So it's just a matter of, you know, with age, you know, we're going to get more DNA mutations. That's basically how we all die. I mean, I always say being born is a fatal disease. And that's one of the ways that we age. I mean, we just get an accumulation of DNA mutations. And the more plant foods you eat, you're going to have much higher antioxidant activity. It's going to keep the free radical damage more to a minimum. But one other thing you need to know is that, you know, every time your cells divide, when they go through replication, it opens up, the DNA opens up. And that's really when it's going to be subject to more DNA mutations. That's why, for instance, blood cancers are one of the highest. They have one of the highest cancer rates, because there's a lot of cell division going on. So there's a higher probability of just getting a DNA mutation just through random chance. So there is that situation that, for instance, in your aunt's, unfortunate, death and so forth, that you're going to get some of those just through random chance. So it's nothing that the patient did. It's just the fact that just being alive, just as your mitochondria are creating energy, they're releasing free radicals, and you know, your body has basically three innate antioxidants in each cell: your glutathione, peroxidase, your superoxide dismutase, and your catalase. And they're basically neutralizing all these free radicals. In fact, one interesting fact I have on my book, that when I did the research, it almost blew my mind. Catalase is one of the innate antioxidants in each one of your cells. Every second, it neutralizes 40 million free radicals. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on in your body, just so we can have this conversation. I mean, it's like, it's mind blowing. So your body's neutralizing trillions and trillions of free radicals in a typical day. So it's really fascinating stuff.
So one of the things you had mentioned is the idea of plant-based foods. And I think, without freaking people out, I've had so many doctors and experts on the podcast, and they say, you know, like, we live in a toxic world. I mean, you could do anything. You walk out on the street and you're being bombarded with Wi-Fi and, you know, exhaust from cars. Like, it just, I think there's things that we can do to help ourselves without being like, oh my God, I have to live in a bubble because I'm going to get cancer or a disease everywhere I go. Like, it just, we naturally live in a very almost toxic world. And I believe our bodies are meant to detox, but I also think we are so bombarded on a daily basis that it's like, it's hard for our bodies to constantly keep up with all the things that we are constantly bringing into our lives and into our bodies. So what are some maybe things besides eating plant-based that we can do that will help combat our potential of getting any sort of disease or cancer or anything along those lines?
Well, I will tell you right off the bat, they've done studies where they've compared the pesticide levels in vegans. And I hate the word vegan, because you could be eating Oreos and drinking Coke all day and you're vegan. I hate that word. I like to use whole food, plant-based, but they've measured the pesticide level, the organic organophosphate pesticides in vegans versus animal product eaters. And their levels are much, much lower. In fact, I just read one study that even in a week, if you just go organic and you primarily eat plant foods, you'll decrease your pesticide levels by 89%, like in 1 week. So that's one of the things. And what people need to realize is when you eat animal products, there's something called bioaccumulation. You've probably had people that you've interviewed talk about this. But for instance, there was a really good study in the International Journal Environmental Pollution, where they took, believe it or not, wild caught salmon outside of Seattle, and they analyzed their fat tissue for prescription drugs. There were 81 different prescription drugs bioaccumulated into the fat tissue. So when you're eating animal products, for instance, when you eat a steak, you know, all the pesticides that cattle or cow was exposed to, they bioaccumulate in the fat tissue. So, and they're, gradually released in periods of time where you're not being exposed to as many. But when you eat animal products, you definitely get way more pesticides. I even tell people, even if you eat plants that have pesticides on them, you're getting way lower pesticide exposure than if you eat a lot of animal products. So that's number one. Number two, I would say, like, for instance, there are certain things that I do. I think having filtered water is one of the most important things that you can do. In fact, I heard one of your podcasts about zero water filter. I think that's a good idea. I personally have reverse osmosis in my house. I pretty much get all the water, but my mother died of leukemia when she was 57 years old, and she got diagnosed at 54, and we were trying to do everything we could to help her live longer. And I remember having a water filter company come in, I think it was Colligan, and they put two electrodes in the water. And I would say probably about a third of the water precipitated out into a solid, which really freaked me. I mean, that vision is in my head. It'll be there forever. And that's when we decided we needed to get a water filter. And then after that happened, I called the water authority because I wanted to see what was in the water. What were all these precipitates in there? And initially they didn't send it to me. They were kind of like, kind of stalling. And then I kept, I had contact about three times. Finally, they sent me all the chemicals that were in there. It was like three pages of two columns. You can't believe what's in the water. There's all kind of heavy metals, there's pesticides, there's, there's prescription drugs in there. So drinking pure water is probably one of the most important things you can do to really help, keep your system, more in a detox kind of a situation. I use, for instance, this morning when I use my deodorant, I use like this crystal deodorant. The soap that I use a lavender soap by Dr. Bronner's. So there's things, and even your cleaning products, you got to be careful with. I mean, I read one study where, women that use, conventional cleaning products over 20 years, they actually have the same cancer rates as people that smoke for 20 years. So, you're breathing that in all the time. So, and you're probably familiar with that website, EWG.org, where they kind of, if you type in different, if you put like shampoos in there, it'll give you the ones that are the most, the least toxic. So I would recommend your viewers and listeners to go on to EWG.org. And they're the ones that have the dirty dozen as far as the foods that you should get organic, and then the clean 15, the ones that you can kind of get away without, getting organic. But we are exposed on a daily basis. But I do think if you do eat more plant-based, you really drink really super clean water, and you go on EWG.org and then kind of look at different things that you're using, skin creams, because you do get a lot of absorption from all that stuff, your shampoos, your deodorant, you can keep those exposures down, but you do have to keep a healthy liver too, because, I hear all these podcasts and people are talking about doing these GI cleanses where they're like doing enemas and all this stuff. And really, detoxification is basically primarily in your liver. You have phase one enzymes that basically metabolize whatever the toxin is to a molecule that can then go to phase two, enzymes. So the first ones are called cytochrome 450 enzymes, and it goes to your phase two. Then your phase two enzymes basically make that molecule into a water soluble molecule. And then from there, it goes to phase three. So that's like sweating. That's why exercise is really important. You know, when you're sweating or getting into a, you know, infrared sauna, you know, you're sweating. So you're excreting a lot of those water soluble, you know, molecules then through your urine, your kidney, and then your feces. You're getting a lot of, excretion of all these toxins. So a lot of it is really keeping your liver healthy. I put all my patients on milk thistle, for instance, that has a very, you know, potent, protective effect on the liver. Also, there's a lot of things you can do to increase your glutathione levels in your liver. You know, glutathione transferase is one of the main phase two enzymes. And there's a lot of things you could do. For instance, cruciferous vegetables have a lot of sulforaphane. And sulforaphane is the most potent stimulator of glutathione in the liver. And it's in broccoli, that's where it's the highest. And actually, broccoli sprouts have 25 times more sulforaphane than even plain broccoli. So if you can do broccoli sprouts, put them on your salad, that's another way to kind of increase your glutathione activity in your liver. But, you know, things like turmeric have been shown to increase the glutathione. Vitamin C has been shown to increase the glutathione levels in your liver. So there's a lot of things you can do naturally to help you detox. A lot of it is liver health, you know, like, and once again, I'm not into all these GI things where, people are doing coffee enemas and, and cleaning out their gut. And, that's where the microbiome is. And that's what you want to protect. So you do an enema, I mean, you're destroying a lot of the good bacteria, the Prevotella bacteria in your gut. And I will tell you, and I've heard some of your podcasts, the microbiome is probably one of the most important parts to keeping good health. The body has, and various experts will disagree on this, but I've read several articles on this, but you have about 37 trillion bacteria in your gut. And you have about 37 trillion cells in your body. So you have about as many cells in your body as you have bacteria in your gut. And you basically have the good bacteria, which are Prevotella. And there's a lot of subspecies under that. There's about 36,000 species of bacteria in your gut. And then you have, on the other side, you have Bacteroidetes. So they're the bad bacteria. And just getting rid of the word plant, let's just use the word fiber. Because there's all this stuff about carnivore diet, keto diet, the vegans argue with the carnivores. I mean, it gets crazy. Let's just use the word fiber and get rid of the word plant. The studies show without question that the more fiber you eat, the greater the diversity in your microbiome, the greater the levels of the Prevotella, the lower the levels of the bad Bacteroidetes. There was an amazing study. It was done in Lancet 2019. And what they did is that they looked at 185 prospective studies. There were 58 clinical trials, 135 million person years. And they looked at the highest fiber consumers versus the lowest. The highest fiber consumers had a 30% lower chance of dying during that period of time. So when you eat more fiber, you have a much lower overall all-cause mortality rate. And then there was another study that kind of like more incrementalized it. It was a 2014 study where they looked at 42 cohorts. It was like 1.7 million people. And they basically wanted to see for every 10 grams of fiber, what effect did it have on all-cause mortality? And what they found was, for every 10 grams, which would be half a cup of lentils or navy beans, it decreased the overall mortality, like the cardiovascular mortality, by 47%. I mean, it was kind of mind-blowing, to be honest with you. I mean, that's pretty significant for just increasing your fiber content, even by 10 grams. You get a significant reduction. And the way that a lot of that happens is that your good bacteria, your Prevotella, They release these short chain fatty acids, butyrate, propionate, acetate. And these have very profound anti-inflammatory effects. They jack up your immune activity in your body. They release serotonin and dopamine. So they're very healthy for good mental health. They feed your immune cells that kind of line the gut. And I'm sure you've heard this on your podcast that most people think 70-80% of your immune function is actually in your gut. So taking care of that microbiome is really extremely important. And there's just one last study I just wanted to go over because it was prospective. It was in Nature, and it was in 2014. And they basically took two groups of people. They put one on a totally carnivore diet. They took the other on a completely plant-based diet, and they analyzed their microbiome before they started the study. And just in 5 days, the microbiome dramatically changed. The plant-based eaters had the Prevotella go up, the good bacteria go up very high levels. The Bacteroides went down to very low levels. The meat eaters had very high Bacteroides, bad, and then they had low levels of the Prevotella. So even in 5 days, you can really dramatically change the microbiome. In fact, one of the things my wife and I try to do because of the American Gut Project. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Robert Knight, he's a famous microbiome researcher. And he basically put two different groups. He put them on 10 different plant foods over the course of a week. And the other group, he put them on 30 different plant foods in the course of the week. And he found that at the end of the study, the people that were eating 30 different plant foods in the course of a week, they had a much greater diverse microbiome. It was much healthier. So my wife and I personally, we always eat at least 30 different plant foods every week. And then with herbs and spices, we really try to keep it about 40. I mean, people forget that herbs and spices are probably the most potent antioxidant foods on the face of the earth, per weight. But it's really not that hard to do. If you eat a salad, you can put 20 different vegetables just in the salad, so it's not really that hard to get 30 different plant foods in the course of a day. So, or a week, I'm sorry. So that's basically what our goal is. And we get that very easily. I'd say some weeks we're probably up to 50 with, different herbs and spices and so forth.
I realize that this is going to be a loaded question, but if someone is like, oh my God, okay, I know I need to probably eat a little bit better. What are, in your opinion, I guess we'll say across the board, because I can appreciate it'll be different for different people, but maybe your top five fruits and or vegetables that you think people should be consuming on a daily basis that would help them to either combat cancer or at least keep in a healthy state?
That's easy. I know I throw out all these studies, but I think when you have studies, it gives more credibility to what you're saying. There was an article in, it was a 2009 Journal of Food Chemistry. And this is a really, when I do my cancer, counseling consults, I always go over this study. They basically took 34 different food extracts and they applied them to 8 different cancers. And they wanted to see what kind of cancer activity there was to each different type of cancer. It was like glioblastoma, lung cancer, pancreatic. They had these 8 different cancers. And one, the thing that was very consistent, if you looked at the graph, there were these bars, and the shorter the bar, the more potent the anti-cancer activity. So in yellow, I highlighted the allium vegetables. So that would be your, onions, garlic, leeks, they're the allium. And then in green, I had the cruciferous vegetables. That would be, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage. You can look it up on the internet. There's a lot of them, radish. But consistently, the cruciferous vegetables were on the right side of the graph, no matter what the cancer was. But with each graph, and the thing I always stress to the people, I have them follow, for instance, bok choy, which is a cruciferous vegetable, but bok choy is in green, so they can kind of see where it moves. So with each cancer, the bok choy, one of the, I forget which one, I think it was lung, it was all the way to the left, so it hardly did anything. So the point I try to get out with that illustration is that you really need to eat a variety of different fruits, but I would say cruciferous vegetables are something you should eat every day. And then the allium vegetables. So that would be your onion, garlic, leeks, and then your cruciferous vegetables would be the ones that I talked about. Now, as far as fruits, by far berries are the most important. I eat berries every single day. In fact, one of the things I do that I would really encourage your listeners to do, I do freeze-dried powders every morning in my coffee. I actually put 12 different freeze-dried powders. They're fruit powders. I put them in my coffee every morning. And I do intermittent fasting. I eat my last meal like at 8 and I don't eat until noon. Like I haven't eaten yet. It's 10:30 right now. But I did have my coffee while I do my computer work in the morning. But freeze-dried powders are amazing because when they're processed, all the nutrients are still intact. But a gram of blueberry powder, for example, is like eating 50 grams of blueberries. And there's one study that I always go over in my lectures. It was on strawberry powder. It was done in Asia, where they had people that had early esophageal cancer, which is the most deadly cancer next to pancreatic. So pancreatic's the worst, esophageal's the next. So these people had early esophageal cancer. And they basically went down with an endoscope to take photos of what the cancer looked like. So they put these people on a quarter cup of freeze-dried powder every day for 6 months. And then they went down with the endoscope and then they took pictures of the same cancer. And they found that 80.6% of them actually had reversal of the cancer and 50% had complete elimination. And I have the photos, I have them on my website and so forth, but it's like the cancers are completely gone. So the phytonutrients that I talked about earlier, I mean, they are super concentrated in these freeze-dried powders. Like I do just kind of give you an idea. I do a blackberry. I do a blueberry, raspberry, strawberry, acai. I do goji berry, cacao. That's kind of the one I put the most in because it gives it kind of a chocolate. I do a little bit of a vegan protein powder in there. Then I add a little bit of clove, cinnamon, and then I use a large 24-ounce coffee cup. Then the other half of the cup I fill with soy milk. And then when I get about halfway, I fill it up again with soy milk. I calculated by the time the day even starts, I already have at that point 27 grams of protein and 12 grams of fiber before the day even started. Like people always say, oh, you get enough protein. Well, I just drank my coffee. I'm already up to 27 grams of protein and I didn't even do anything. But I would say, once again, the cruciferous vegetables, the blueberries. So if you're going to do those freeze-dried powders, I would do the blackberry, the blueberry, raspberry, strawberry. You can get them on Amazon. You just take a teaspoon. You can put it in your smoothie. I do it in my coffee. And then as far as spices, I would say turmeric is by far your most potent anti-cancer spice. I mean, it is. If you go in the scientific literature, there's over 12,000 articles on turmeric, and its anti-cancer activity is mind-blowing. I mean, it pretty much affects cancer at every phase from initiation all the way through progression. It disrupts cell signaling. It disrupts blood angiogenesis, has a very potent antioxidant effect. It disrupts cell signaling at various aspects of cell division of the cancer cell. So turmeric, I would say, is definitely the one spice that I would strongly recommend. Oh, and the other thing that I think is extremely important is a serving of beans every day. I would say that beans are one of the most potent, anti-cancer foods because they do have high levels of phytates. Phytates have been shown to actually fight every type of cancer. I've gone through the studies. I mean, it has an anti-cancer effect against esophageal, colon, breast. I mean, you name the cancer, it has an effect. And they've shown that when you eat phytate, when you eat beans and the phytates in there, they actually go directly to the cancer. They've done scans, radioactive phytate scans, where they, make the phytate radioactive and then they kind of follow it and they can see that as soon as you ingest it, it goes directly to the cancer cells. So it's directly fighting the cancer. And if you look at are you familiar with the blue zones at all?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Yeah. So I always refer to the blue zones because, there's all these fad diets, people come up with the carnivore diet, the keto diet, take this, alpha ketoglutarate and you're going to live longer, take metformin, you're going to, these people in the blue zones, which are, I carry a Greece, Sardinia, Okinawa, Nicoya in Costa Rica, and then Loma Linda in California. I mean, a lot of these people in these other, you know, some of these underdeveloped countries that are in the blue zones, I mean, they only got a cell phone. So, they don't know the new, what's the new fad. So these people basically eat a 90-95% plant-based diet. That most of them eat meat. They'll usually eat meat maybe once or twice a meat. It's about the size of a deck of cards. They move a lot. They're moving almost every 20 minutes. So they're exercising almost all day. They don't have very stressful lives, which is really important. They sleep great. They don't wake up to an alarm clock. Basically, when the sun comes up, that's when they wake up. And they have really good social connections. So they really have a lot of family support and so forth. So I always tell people that, you know, get into all these arguments about the latest fad diet. I said, you know what? Let's just look at the longest, you know, prospective study you could ever do. Look at these people who've been living this way for like hundreds of years. And the average person in these blue zones, the average woman lives 10 years longer and the average man lives about 14 years longer. So, you know, if you want to increase your longevity and your health span, which I think is really important, a lot of us are living long, but the last 10, 20 years of our life, we, you know, we're getting knee replacements, we have heart disease, diabetes, we're on all these medications. I mean, we're not living a high quality of life. So our health span has gotten shorter. But these people in the blue zones, I mean, they live very long. In fact, I ran into a doctor, my wife and my two daughters, we went to Cabo St. Lucas, and we did like a moped beach tour. It was kind of neat. And then we had a lunch break. And I ran into this doctor from Nicoya, Costa Rica, which is one of the blue zones. And when he told me that, I got all excited and I started asking him all kind of questions. And I said, hey, is it true like these people, you know, in Nicoya live long? He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, it's crazy. He said, you'll go up to somebody 100 years old and their cognition is perfect. And, you know, they're living a very full life. And I said, well, how do these people die? And he said, well, they don't have like long periods of chronic disease. It's like they'll get a pneumonia and like 3 days later they're dead, or they'll just go to bed and have a heart attack and that's it. You know, so they don't have these long periods where they're living with all this chronic disease and they need knee replacements and are having all this pain and so forth. So I always tell people, go to the Blue Zones, get the book, follow Blue Zones on Instagram. Dan Buettner's amazing. And, he has a lot of amazing information on there that, you know, it's just really a lot of it's basic common sense. So that's something I would strongly recommend for your listeners.
It's amazing. I watched a documentary once on Netflix, and I specifically remember the guy on there saying it's not enough to live a long life. You want to live a long life without disease, something along those lines.
Right, I'm right.
Totally butchering
exactly.
It. Yeah. But it's true, because you hear these people who are like, you know, an example, a lady near my grandmother's the other day, she finally passed away. And I say that like, thank God, because I mean, I'm almost 32 years old. And I remember from being a small child, like this lady was like constantly bedridden and sick. And it's like, that's like 30 years of living your life in a bed, not doing anything. Like that's not, nobody wants to live that way. That doesn't sound like a fun way to live life, just because you're alive, but you're, you know, you can't do anything. That's just, it's awful.
Yes. And the standard American diet is really, you know, it's really destroying a lot of people's health. I mean, the average American's eating about 60% of their diet, ultra processed foods. And I would say one thing about all these different fads, you know, keto, carnivore, whatever. I mean, I would say the good thing about all of them is they tell people to quit eating ultra processed foods, because, you know, the studies show over and over, when you eat a high volume processed foods, I mean, you definitely do not live long, and your obesity rates go up dramatically. You know, in the United States, 60% of people are either obese or overweight, which is really, I mean, it's pretty sad. And a lot of it really does have to do with, you know, the advent of a lot of these ultra processed foods. And the other thing, I really think a lot of the food industry, they really put out a lot of these studies that are very, they're poorly designed and they confuse people. All they really want to do is just get you confused enough where you throw up your hands and you go, okay, I'm just going to keep eating the way I do. Like this whole thing with saturated fat. I mean, there's thousands of studies that show when you jack up your saturated fat ingestion, you increase your LDL bad cholesterol. And LDL bad cholesterol is like, it's correlated with cardiovascular mortality. It's a straight line. If you look at graphs, I looked at one graph, you know, over the 5 years they've done, there have been eight, what they call Mendelian randomization studies. And what that means is you take people that have genetically high LDL. It's a familial thing. Then you have some people that have genetically a low LDL. And then you look at their cardiovascular death over the course of their life. It's a straight line. I mean, people that have high LDL have really super high cardiovascular events. And then there's been about 28 randomized controlled studies, and they all show the same thing. It's like, it's a straight line. So the more saturated fat you eat, higher the LDL, the higher the LDL, the higher the, you know, the cardiovascular events. But these, what some of these studies do is they'll basically take, for instance, people that already are eating a high saturated fat diet, and they'll compare it to a group that's eating higher saturated fat. Now, what we've found is 10% saturated fat seems to be the point where it makes a huge difference in your cardiovascular mortality and your LDL levels. So the way saturated fat jacks up your bad cholesterol, it really affects the ability of the LDL, the bad cholesterol receptor on your liver, to actually take in and metabolize the LDL. So the LDL starts accumulating. So that's how high saturated fat, you know, how that essentially works, you know, in jacking up your LDL cholesterol. So the more saturated, so when you have one group that goes from, let's say they're eating 15% saturated fat to 20% saturated fat, you will see no difference in LDL or cardiovascular mortality. If you go from, if you take somebody like me, I probably eat like 3-4% saturated fat. If you take somebody like me at 3%, and you compare it to somebody that's eating 8%, you won't see that much of a difference. It's when you go from like 8% to 15%, that's when you see this dramatic increase in LDL and cardiovascular mortality. So what a lot of these food industry studies do is they basically do what I just said. So then they go, okay, saturated fat doesn't really have any effect on LDL, has no effect on cardiovascular mortality. So somebody reads that, and once again, if I put that on Instagram, your doctor has been wrong all these years. You can eat all the saturated fat you want. I'm going to get a lot of hits on Instagram. But if I say broccoli's good for you, I'm like, I'm not going to get any hits on Instagram. So that's the way the whole thing works. And then it gets popular. And then, you know, that person gets on all these different podcasts, like the Carnivore Code. You know, I saw that interview with Joe Rogan with Dr. Paul Saladino. And he eats a carnivore diet. He was bragging that his LDL was 535, which it should be 80 or below, you know. So I really think that people really need to understand that the science is pretty clear on keeping your saturated fat down. You know, animal products have much higher levels of saturated fat and cholesterol. Like, for instance, eggs have about 200 milligrams of cholesterol. You know, you can eat eggs, but you should, you know, you shouldn't overdo it with eggs, because cholesterol definitely does increase your cholesterol, not as much as saturated fat, by the way, but it does. And when you have high cholesterol levels, it actually makes your saturated fat have more of a negative activity on the LDL receptor. So it's all like very convoluted, but there's definitely a correlation between high saturated fat and high cholesterol and cardiovascular events. So it's, you know, and by the way, for cancer patients, 20% of cancer patients don't die of cancer. They die of a cardiovascular event. And that's why on my, you know, Instagram site and on my, my website, I always have information about cardiovascular health, because, I've personally counseled a man that had, you know, metastatic lung cancer, and he was doing pretty good with his cancer, but then he had a cardiovascular event. He died. You know? So his wife called me one day and goes, hey, you know, he died. And it really upset me, but it wasn't from the cancer. It was really from a cardiovascular event. So
when you say, you know, cardiovascular, are you meaning like just like a heart attack or like, you know, like pneumonia seems to be a big one that wipes people out. Like they get sick and it's, I can't even remember what it is that they say. Like, it's not like the pneumonia that kills, is it? Sorry, I got that wrong. It's usually pneumonia that kills people that have some sort of disease, not the disease itself. Is that kind of like, is that what you mean by cardiovascular?
Yeah. So when I say cardiovascular disease, I'm talking about heart attacks and strokes. That's basically what I'm talking about. You know, people dying of pneumonia, for instance, the kind of cancer I have is multiple myeloma. It's a cancer of the immune system. A lot of people with multiple myeloma end up dying of pneumonia because their immune system just, you know, the plasma cells, the myeloma cells, the cancer cells kind of crowd out the good white cells. So the body really can't, you know, counter that. You know, obviously when we had COVID, a lot of people were dying of that. But one of the things we did know, and one of the things that really did upset me about the whole COVID thing was that we knew that people that were obese, people that had diabetes, people that had, you know, cardiovascular disease, we knew that those people had a higher incidence of getting it and then dying from it. And it would have been a great opportunity for the, you know, for the government and people like Fauci and so forth to go in front of the people and say, hey, you know what, why don't we start trying to change our health habits? You know, why don't we try to eat maybe more plant foods, cut out some of the ultra processed foods. Let's get our weight down. Let's exercise more. I mean, it would have been like a perfect opportunity to really improve the health of people all throughout the world. And it was totally blown, you know? So I just think, you know, we should have done that. And the other thing is I always go over this, you know, vitamin D was something that we definitely noticed. People that had higher vitamin D levels actually had much lower incidence of COVID. And then if they got it, they had a much lower incidence of being hospitalized or dying from it. So, you know, like where you live in Halifax, I will guarantee you probably 90% of the people, if you check their vitamin D levels, I guarantee you they're low, you know? So taking a vitamin D supplement is so simple to do. I think everybody should basically take a vitamin D supplement, make sure you get your levels checked. I personally try to keep mine between 80 to 100 nanograms per mil. You know, I think normal rates on most labs are, I think it says like 30 to 50, somewhere in there. But I actually recommend my patients to keep it around 80 to 100. And I'll check their vitamin D levels every so often just to see where they are and then adjust their, you know, their vitamin D supplementation based on that.
Yeah, no, I've been taking vitamin D consistently. I'm pretty good in the summertime, but in the wintertime, I mean, from fall, winter, and spring, even I up my vitamin D levels because it makes a huge difference to me and my mental health. And I can only imagine like physically wise, like what kind of difference it makes. I feel like I haven't, you know, for example, even my husband and I, we haven't been, knock on wood, we haven't really been sick in a while. And I really attribute it to taking all these supplements and eating really healthy. Like you were saying, you know, the fact of eating like a salad is so easy to do because you can get so many vegetables and stuff on it. I'm not a huge salad person, but I make a smoothie every single day. And for me, it's such an easy way to cram everything into a smoothie, including turmeric. Like I add turmeric to a smoothie because I'm like, I don't know what else I would really consume it. And it's just like, you don't taste it. You just add it in and you're like, boom, I get it every single day now.
Oh, smoothies are amazing. In fact, in my book, I do a smoothie every day and I have my recipe for that. Like one of the things they have at Trader Joe's, they have it's a packet with all four berries and they're organic and you just kind of throw them in there and all, you know, right there, you got all the berries I was talking about before. And I've listened to your podcast before about frozen vegetables and, you know, fruits. And I do think that's a really good way to, you know, ingest, have those available, you know, for cooking or throwing into a smoothie and so forth. And they actually have much higher nutrient value because like I've heard you say, and I've heard other people say on interviews, you know, when they freeze it, essentially you're taking the plant food and you're immediately freezing it, where when it's going to the grocery store, I mean, it's sitting around for, you know, for days, by the time you get to it and you pick it and you take it home, and might sit in the refrigerator for a couple of days. So, you know, I think it's a good idea to, I think smoothies are great. Especially if, you know, if you don't like to eat a lot of fruit and so forth, it's a great way to do that. And you could throw some kale in there and get some of those cruciferous vegetables in there and really, you know, pretty much get that diverse, plant food over the course of a week. And like I said, the goal should be really try to get 30 plant foods over the course of a week. Everybody can't do that. I understand that, but it's not that hard to do. I would say two easy things to do are salads. And then if you make a bean soup with a bunch of different vegetables in it, and you're getting your beans and all those different vegetables. So they're two easy things that people can do. And you can keep them in your fridge. You can even the bean soup, you can even freeze it and pull it out, just, you know, throw it in the microwave and just eat it. Even with salads, you can, you know, there's different ways. I have on my Instagram site different ways you can kind of put them in a jar and have your salads actually, you know, protected, and then you kind of prep at the beginning of the week and then you just pull it out and eat it, you know. So there's a lot of ways that you can get more plant foods into your diet. You just have to, you really have to plan. I think prep is important, but I think just kind of going into the day and not planning, you know, kind of what you're going to be eating is a recipe for disaster. You know, before you know it, you're at McDonald's eating a Big Mac or whatever. So you really have to take your health seriously and try to get as many plant foods as you can in a typical day, because you're going to be much healthier if you do that.
I would love, before I send everybody to check you out online and to follow you and all that stuff, I would love if you could take a moment and just talk about your book, Beat Back Cancer Naturally. What can people expect from it? Is it ideal for somebody who is going through treatment or cancer? Or is it, you know, even for the person who's like, hey, I don't have any of these things, but I'm just trying to be proactive about, you know, making sure that I can live a healthy, disease-free life?
It's really for everyone. In fact, I do a lot of weight loss counseling too for people, because, you know, just having a higher BMI makes you much more prone to getting cancer right off the bat. So a lot of it is, in fact, if you look at my book, I mean, there's basically five principles, and it says to prevent, survive, and thrive with cancer. So it's also for people that don't want to get it. I mean, 40% of us at this point are going to get cancer at some point. So, you know, and when you get the C word, trust me, no one can prepare for how you deal with that, you know, mentally. And I even get into the first chapter is my personal story, kind of what I told you. But one of the things I did do, I had a friend that actually had myeloma, and she told me to see a psychologist just to kind of, you know, get my head straight, because, when you get diagnosed, it's a super head trip. We all know we're going to die, but when it's right in front of your face, I mean, you really have to get all your spiritual priorities together. You know, you can say you believe in Jesus Christ or whatever, but it's like, you know, when it's right in front of you, it's like, hey, you know what? Like, do I pray every day? Do I, you know? And you really have to get all that straight. So I did go to a psychologist. I just went 3 times, and it really helped me, because I was afraid. You know, it's like, you're not so much afraid of dying, but you're afraid of what you're going to have to go through to get there. And she really helped me through that, because that's what she did for a living. She counseled people, just cancer patients. So I do think, you know, anybody that does have cancer, it's a good idea to see a psychologist. But kind of going over the five principles, the first one is a whole food plant-based diet. And I go into all the different things that I kind of went over, the synergy of plant foods and so forth. And at the end, I go over all the different ways that phytochemicals actually work, very much like even chemo drugs. It really is kind of mind blowing. Then the second principle are targeted supplements. You know, I personally take 30 supplements a day. I don't expect everyone to do that. But they're primarily herbal supplements. I'm not a real big fan of taking individual vitamins, for example. Like, I don't take a vitamin C. I don't take a vitamin. Like, the only individual vitamins I take are B12 and D. And I really believe in whole foods, because, and I don't want to get into a lot of science, but if you understand how free radical works, free radical is a molecule with an unpaired electron. So vitamin C comes in and it basically contributes its electron to the free radical. And that's basically how the free radical stops doing its deadly activity to DNA and cellular membranes and so forth. But the vitamin C, it just gave away its electron, right? It just became a free radical. So when you're eating whole foods, there's this whole cycling that's going on. I mean, God put all these phytonutrients in there. And when one contributes an electron, then the one next to it, it kind of gives its electron to the one that just gave it away. So there's this whole cycling that goes on. So the supplements that I recommend are primarily herbal supplements, like, you know, amla, ashwagandha, astragalus, like, you know, all these I have heavily researched. Anything that I take because the science is really pretty intense as far as how they can have an anti-cancer activity. So it'd be targeted supplements. And then exercise is super, super critical. That would be one of the third precepts. And there's just one study I want your listeners to hear because it is really pretty mind-blowing. I mean, they've shown people that exercise regularly have about a 10 to 35% lower incidence of getting any kind of cancer, you know, right off the bat. But people that have breast cancer and they want to prevent a relapse, they did this study where if women just did brisk walking for a half an hour a day, they lowered their relapse rate by 24%. If they ran 2/3 of a mile, they decreased it by 40%. And if they ran 2.3 miles a day, they decreased it by 95%. I mean, that's absolutely mind-blowing. And for you, you know, I know you do coaching and so forth, but one of the things that people need to understand is even if you do 6 minutes of exercise, it jacks up your natural killer cell activity. They're the cells that kill cancer by 50%. So I always tell, like, I do a 15-band resistance training exercise every morning. And sometimes I don't, you know what it's like. You don't feel like doing it or you're in a hurry. I just cut it in half. I do 7.5 minutes. I know I'm jacking up my natural killer cell activity and I'm at least getting some resistance to my muscles and so forth. So read the chapter on exercise. I think it's important. I always tell people if exercise were in a pill, everybody in the world would be taking it. And exercise helps you with the next two precepts. So the next one is sleep. When you exercise on a routine basis, you definitely sleep better. And the last one is stress reduction. So when you exercise, you feel less stressed. I mean, how many times have you felt like the world was going to cave in, then you went out for a run or something and then, oh, everything's fine, you know? So, but I go through, you know, with sleep, I go over the different ways you can help get the sleep. Sleep is really one of the most important things. You talked about detoxing. I mean, that's really when a lot of your detoxing, your DNA repair, your immune surveillance, there's a lot of cancer cell destruction going on. Melatonin is a very potent antioxidant and anti-cancer molecule. So melatonin is released from your pineal gland. And it's really, there's a lot going on while you're sleeping. So if you're sleeping, you know, 5 hours a night, you're going to be very, very unhealthy. In fact, there was one study where they, 5 hours was like the kind of the critique they used, but people that had 5 hours or less had a, I think it was like a 50% increase in overall mortality over, it was like over a 25-year period. So sleep is so, so essential. And then I think we all know, like, when you're under constant stress, and I think that was probably one of the reasons I got myeloma. I worked crazy hours. I would get up at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd be doing surgery all day. I'd get home like 8 or 9 o'clock. And I was just burning the candle at both ends. And I really do think, that was one of the factors in my life that contributed to me getting cancer at the age of 64. I'm 70 now. And it, you know, it definitely has an effect. So I go over a lot of the different ways that you can, you know, kind of minimize your stress, you know, deep breathing, mindfulness, you know, even just reading a book sometimes can, you know, get your head off of everything that's going on. The other thing that my oncologist recommended for me, and he recommends this to everyone, is to keep working. You know, don't work in a stressful job, but if you have cancer and you just stay at home all day and you know, it's like, okay, woe is me, I have cancer. You know, you're going to have a lot of stress. You're not going to be a happy person. So it's good to really, you know, kind of keep working. And then under the exercise chapter, I do get into fasting, because fasting and exercise kind of, a lot of the same things happen when you're doing fasting versus exercise. So I do, as I told you, I eat all my food within an 8-hour window. The reason I do that, the first study that came out, and I have it in my book, they looked at breast cancer patients and they looked at 13 hours seemed to be the magic number. So people that fasted more than 13 hours every day versus less than 13 hours. And the people that fasted more than 13 hours had a 36% reduction in breast cancer relapse rates. So I do think when you're fasting, there's a lot of autophagy going on. Your body's cleaning up a lot of the, you know, misfolded proteins. You know, the DNA repair is going on. So I do think that, you know, kind of eating your food within a, you know, 8-hour window or 10-hour, whatever you think you want to do, I do think it does help with health. And they also show that people that fast before and after chemo, they actually get better results and they get less side effects. Dr. Walter Longo, you should try to get him on your podcast. He's the world's expert on fasting, and he's done a lot of rodent studies that show this. Now he's doing a lot of clinical trials. But if you fast a patient 24 hours before their chemo and then 24 to 36 hours after, and it's really caloric restriction, like 5 to 1,000 calories per day, they get much better results with their chemotherapy. So, but they're the basic principles in the book. And once again, it's for everybody. It's for people that want to prevent it and people that have it. They don't want to get it again, and they want to live a very full and energetic life like I do. I mean, I live the most amazing life anybody could ever wish. So I have tons of energy. I just live, I exercise every single day. I bike, I do my band routine every day. I get 8 hours of sleep. I mean, I live a very full life, and I get to help a lot of people that are struggling either with weight loss or with cancer. So it's really been a, in some ways, I hate to say it, but cancer's kind of been a blessing for me because it's put me in a little bit of a different situation. I mean, that was one of the reasons I decided to sell my my practice to a venture capital group, give me a chance to kind of go in a direction where I could really, you know, help people because I really understand what it's like to go through cancer. You know, like being a cancer patient myself, I can super relate with these people that I'm counseling. So it's been a very positive journey. I know that sounds weird, but cancer makes me appreciate every day more, no question.
It has been such a fun conversation to have you on. I feel like you drop so much knowledge, and it's, you know, out of yourself and everybody else who's been on this podcast, there's, you know, there's a little bit of variation when it comes to things like, you know, some people are like, you should meditate for this long or this long when it comes to stress reduction, but it's the same principles that everybody speaks about. Sleep well, eat well, move your body, you know, get, find some stress management principles. And, you know, I think in this world, we all want this like super quick fix, or you see all these biohacks. And I mean, I think there's some valid points to some of these biohacks. And, you know, I'm 5 months pregnant, so I'm not doing a sauna right now, but I love a good sauna when I'm not and stuff, and those are great. And if you can do it, great. But I feel like we don't have to go this route. You don't have to have millions of dollars to be this healthy person because you need the infrared sauna and the cold plunge and all of these things. We go back to basics, you know, move your body. I always say, like, if you're going to the grocery store, park further away so you get those extra steps in. Like,
absolutely.
Eat well and healthy. And yeah, you know, like we want to make things complicating, but they don't have to be.
Like what I said before, follow the blue zones, read the book. There's some really good blue zone cookbooks that my wife uses. They have some amazing recipes in there. But like I said before, a lot of these people don't even have a television or a cell phone. You know, they don't know what the recent biohack is, you know, and they live 10 to 14 years longer than the rest of us. So, you don't need to spend money. You know, it's just basic principles. And sometimes when you do these biohacks, sometimes they can do more harm than good. You know, some people start taking these different supplements, and you know, we don't really know the long-term effects of those. And one of the things, one podcast that I think people should listen to, Simon Hill has a great podcast, and he's from Australia. He's a nutritionalist, and he gets some really like amazing guests on there. But the thing that he always stresses is you have to look at the preponderance of evidence over many years. you can't look at, okay, one study said that saturated fat's good or carnivore diet's good. And, you know, like people been eating that way for like basically a year. You can't make decisions based on that. And once again, go back to the blue zones. What do? They don't do all these crazy biohacks. They don't have cell phones, a lot of them. Like I said, they don't have television. So it's pretty basic principles.
Dr. Dominic, this has been such a fun conversation. If people want to follow you online, maybe they want to check you out or grab a copy of your book, where can everybody go and find you?
Well, two places they can get my book. You can go on Amazon. And if you buy the book on Amazon, make sure you write a review. It really helps kind of get the publicity of the book out there. You can also get it on my website. When you order it on my website, I do give you a signed copy. So they're the two places. It's also in Audible and it's also in Kindle if you go on to Amazon. So if people like to listen, or, you know, I read all my books actually on my iPhone. So I get everything on Kindle. They can get it there. Now, my website is Natural Insights into Cancer, natural, then insights, INSIGHTS, into cancer.com. My Instagram site is Cancer Veggie Doc. That's my Instagram site. And then I do, I have like TikTok, Facebook. It's just Dominic Brandy on there. And I do some YouTube videos. It's Dr. Dominic Brandy, Cancer Veggie Doc. So they can find me there. If they go onto my website, you know, if they want to do a 1 or 2 hour virtual consult, they basically go on there. You just click the box. And then I get a hold of you by email, then text, then we, you know, we organize a meeting through like virtual. And then I have a 24/7 access to me. So I charge $20 a month. If they want to, they can text me, they can email me whenever they want. I used to not charge for that. And I think sometimes people felt inhibited, they were bugging me or whatever. And sometimes I was getting bugged too much. It was getting overwhelming. So I talked to my web designer, said, you know, we probably should charge something. He thought I should charge more than 20, but I think that's a good thing because people get their lab work back. They get nervous. You know, they want me to take a look at it. I give them my opinion. You know, all those patients, I always contact them, you know, at least once or twice a week. Hey, how's it going? Any problems? And then I also do weight loss counseling. And I also check, I have lab work I do through Quest. I check over 70 biomarkers of health. And the way I do that is I kind of talk to them. I get a diagnosis code based on any health issues that are going on. I send them a Quest form through email. They print it off. They go to Quest. And Quests are all over the country. Do you guys have those in Canada, Quest Labs?
I don't know, but I don't think so. But I have heard of, there's a few where, like, as U.S. doctors, you can access Canadian results. But I don't think it's called Quest, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, there's two, Quest and LabCorp. And Quest is all over the United States. So they basically go to Quest, then Quest faxes me the results. And then I contact the patient. I write a big, you know, I kind of go through each one. I will tell you, almost everyone has severe deficiencies in certain minerals. I mean, I don't think I've ever had a patient have a normal molybdenum level. I just can't even think of one that it came back normal. Chromium is low a lot, iodine, you know, it's cobalt is like low on a lot of people. I don't know if it's the fact that we're not rotating the crops, but the mineral levels are really low on a lot of people. Most of them have low vitamin D levels. In fact, before we close, I just want to go over this one study because it was like one of the most amazing studies I ever read. It was in the Journal of International Sports Nutrition. And what they did is they looked at four different diets. They looked at the DASH diet, the South Beach diet. It was the Atkins diet, and it was called the Best Life. That's like Oprah Winfrey's diet, whatever. And they looked at 27 essential nutrients. And what they found was that for the keto diet, just kind of give you an idea, to meet all of the 27 essential micronutrients, you would have to eat 37,500 calories to meet all of the requirements. And all four diets were deficient in vitamin B7, which is biotin, vitamin D, vitamin E. The other ones were chromium, iodine, and I believe it was zinc. And for them, and they all were deficient in those seven essential nutrients. So, and they found that if you just got rid of those six nutrients that I just talked about, the average, they would have to ingest about 3,500 calories per day to meet the requirements for the rest of the 21 essential nutrients, other than those six that I just talked about, that, that they all were deficient in. So I do this biomarker studies. I check C-reactive protein. I check your IGF-1, your growth hormone, your hemoglobin A1C, lipid profile, your omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. I check all your amino acids, vitamin levels, mineral levels. And it really, that's something anybody should do. I don't care if you're a cancer patient or not. It's really good to find out what's going on with your body, because a lot of us are deficient in a lot of minerals, especially.
No, I know. I couldn't agree more. And I think so many of us get used to, you know, living their life and they're like, no, like I feel fine. And it's like, but you're low in this. If you just increase this, you would feel that much better. And they do. And they're like, oh my God, I was living in a cloud before. Like I thought I was living fine, but you know, when you get everything kind of in check, it's like, it's day and night difference of how much better you feel.
Oh, absolutely. I know when I get people eating more plant foods, they definitely feel better. But on the other hand, I will tell you this, there's people that might have like a fructan sensitivity where there's a certain plant food. And I don't know if you're familiar with FODMAP diets and so forth, but FODMAPs are, they're food, they're basically in fiber foods. It's like fructose, oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols, which are like sorbitol and things like that, that are in foods. But you may be eating a plant-based diet and you don't feel good because there's a fructan in there that you're insensitive to. Then you eat a carnivore diet and then you go around, hey, I'm eating all meat and I feel like great. Well, in that situation, just because you feel better for a while doesn't necessarily mean that's a healthy diet. It was like, you needed to kind of analyze what was going on with those fructans, just eliminate maybe some of the, go on the internet, look up fructans, look at the foods that you think you're eating a lot of, maybe eliminate a couple of those, see what happens to your body, and then you'll feel a lot better. So you will feel better on certain types of diets, but I tell people not to use that as the sole criteria. You got to look at the preponderance of evidence also. What kind of diets actually give you like a longer health span? So, just a little food for thought there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and speaking about your expertise, your experience, your journey. I will make sure everything is linked in the show notes, and I'm just so grateful to have had you on.
Oh, it's been fun, and you do a great job on your podcast. I listen to a lot of them, and you know how to pull out the right questions. So you're doing a great job, and you're doing a great service for a lot of different people.
Thank you so much.
If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.